Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Comments are still headed.
What else is on?
Yeah, let's see what else. First.
Coming to you now from the largest studio ever constructed, it's The Truman Show!
Yeah!
Good morning!
Good morning!
Oh, and in case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
What if?
No scripts, no cue cards.
Morning, Spencer! How's it going?
What if you were watched every moment of your life?
How many cameras you got there in that town?
5,000.
I believe Truman is the first child to have been legally adopted by a corporation.
That's correct.
Brilliant.
What if everyone you knew was pretending?
Hi, honey. Look what I got at the checkout. Dishwasher safe.
That's amazing.
Welcome to Rewatchability and Merry Christmas to you all out there. It's Christmas Day, Rob.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas
Joyeux
to you.
Joyeux Noël.
Oh, wow. You're pulling out our national second language here.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sorry. National other language?
I don't know.
We can't say it's just second. We lost all our Quebec followers right
that's
now.
That's right.
We're sorry, Quebec.
And sorry, Maurice.
And you really give us the Christmas, you know? Yeah. Have you ever been to Quebec in the Christmas time?
I have not. No.
It's very nice.
Well, I mean, my town was close to the border of Quebec, so we would go there to go see strippers. There was a stripper named Merry Christmas. No, that's not true. And I never actually went, but people did. No.
But you got stockings that year, which is nice. That is nice. Thank you for tuning in to Rewatchability in this holiday season. This is our last Christmas episode for the decade.
Oh my God. Wow.
We started a year into this decade and we are out of the decade now.
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
It seems crazy.
We've been doing this so long. I feel like a 60-year-old man.
Yeah. I feel like, can't we, like, you know, Tim Allen this onto somebody else, like Santa Closet? Now it's your problem.
Yeah, we should like get Chris Pratt doing it. Wasn't he going to take over like every Hollywood?
Yeah. He would be good. He would be good.
Yeah,
as me.
Right. Yes, as you.
I don't know who we'd get for you, Josh Gad or something.
We'd get the God damn it. I was going to insult myself by saying early Chris Pratt. And then you went ahead and got Josh fucking Gad.
Well, early Chris Pratt is best Chris Pratt. So Merry Christmas, Blaine.
Well, look, Gad is making, you know, Frozen 2. He's rolling that Disney dough.
Wow.
Let's get into the podcast.
Well, wait, why are we doing this movie? Because it is Christmas Day and The Truman Show is not a Christmas movie by any stretch of the imagination, though.
Actually, it might be. And we'll get into that. But what were you going to say, Rob?
Well, I was going to say, you know, there's like the Kristoff character is kind of like Christy. And
he's
it
like
is his birthday. So technically, it is a Christmas movie.
There you
Happy
go.
Birthday, Kristoff.
Kristoff, the Jesus that we all know.
Merry Kristoffmas.
That's the worst.
No, but this is, to be completely transparent, this is a movie that we've intended to do for a while, or at least it's a movie that I've strung you along with over the years, saying, yes, soon, Blaine. Because this is your favorite movie, isn't it?
It was one of my favorite movies when it came out. That is entirely correct. I loved the shit out of this movie.
So I kept saying that one day, soon, maybe next week, we'll do The Truman Show. And I think we've even, like, planned to do The Truman Show, and then we've, like, bumped it the last minute for something else because there was a guest situation or just to ruin Blaine's self-esteem.
It's like the Matt Damon of the Jimmy Kimmel Show
yeah.
of movies.
Yeah.
That was a ham-fisted metaphor?
It was very ham-fisted. But ham is a thing that you serve at Christmas dinner. So
Thank you for
the podcast.
Thank you for saving me.
So I thought, you know, we talk about Christmas movies all December, every December.
It's a lot.
And Christmas isn't A, celebrated by everybody, B, enjoyed by everybody. I don't love Christmas. Mm-hmm. I've come to terms with Christmas.
And maybe if you're listening to this podcast on Christmas Day, you might not want to talk about Christmas. You might want to be like, I want to talk about some other thing other than some dumb Christmas movie.
Yeah. And also, if you have better shit to do on Christmas Day than listen to a podcast,
yeah,
you know, you might want to listen to this on Boxing Day. It's still relevant. This is not have the same expiration date that, you know, talking about the old-timey Christmas Carol does.
Yeah.
You don't want to listen to that in, like, fucking March.
So we're bringing you The Truman Show because this is our gift to ourselves,
yeah.
Rob's gift to me, and our gift to you. No more Christmas.
And Blaine, I did kind of get you a little bit of a Christmas present.
What are you kidding? Are you kidding?
It's, you know, don't get too excited.
No, this is, I feel so bad. I didn't get you anything.
No, I know. You give me nothing all year round.
Rob once showed up to my birthday. With, like, that one of the old Ninja Turtles. We had just done the Ninja Turtles podcast, and it was this old, like, action Ninja Turtles figurine. And I was like, this is so nice. Like, no one, yep. I didn't expect anyone to give me a present, yep, on my birthday. And he had taken it out of the package, you know, ready for me to play with, which is very nice, or set up on my desk.
Yep.
And he handed it to me and said, I found this in the garbage.
Yeah.
And that was my, and then he never said happy birthday.
I didn't know it was your birthday.
You
and I kind of wanted that turtle back.
You did drink some of my beer and then left, though. So that was nice.
So we don't talk about this on the podcast, but a tradition that we do is after we record, we go to the record store.
Oh, wow.
And go through the bins of the records. So I just got a couple of soundtrack records.
That's so nice.
For Blaine.
This is honestly the biggest. This is so nice.
This one's for me, the Lou Reed one. But,
okay. that was the good one. Okay,
I got
cool.
you Vangelis, Chariots of Fire.
Oh, that's a classic.
Do you have this?
I don't have that.
Okay, because, you know, you're a writer. You need something with instrumentals. And yeah, this will, like, motivate you to, like, get to that finish line. Ba 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 ba. Exactly. And then this other one I got is the original motion picture soundtrack for The Blue Lagoon,
which is
a movie I remember seeing as a kid, but I don't think we should ever talk about on the podcast.
No, I mean, the poster of it on the record, oh my lord, the back of it is just naked children, it looks like.
And they're like brother and sister, too. That's
Are
the
they?
Other thing. This is like, Le Cousin's Dangereux.
This is Dangereux on so many levels, Rob.
It's Brooke Shields.
This might be the most inappropriate gift that I've ever been given.
But I think it'll also be really good. Great music, and you don't have to think about the perviness. For you, Blaine.
That's so nice.
Merry Christmas.
That's really nice. And you left the price tag on, which is, I think, my favorite part of this gift. Well, dude, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I got you something a little bit, too. It's the Chariots of Fire soundtrack to the movie.
Wow!
I know that we do this record thing. No, this is really nice. Thank you, Rob.
Listen to them. I expect a report.
Okay. All right. I'll do my record report.
So let's get into our Christmas episode.
Yeah, of The Truman Show, starring Jim Carrey.
Starring Jim Carrey. Blaine, when was the first time that you saw The Truman Show?
I remember seeing this in theaters, but I don't remember who I saw it with because I was just so blindsided by the movie itself. Like, I loved it so much that I was just so sucked into it and could not focus on anything else. I thought about this movie for weeks.
Wow.
I wrote little short stories around the movie.
Wow.
I was a teenager at the time.
Like fan fiction?
Fiction? Maybe. Yeah. You know, little Meryl on the side, you know? No, but I love
Truman's erotic show.
Yeah, man in all capitals on the title. No, I liked it a lot, you could say.
Okay.
And I wanted the DVD
as
soon
you?
As it came out. This was like 1998.
Right. So you saw it right when it came out.
Yeah. And I was, yeah, I was pretty obsessed with it. I thought that Jim Carrey, like, deserved – I followed all the awards that season.
Right.
I was really into the awards. I was like, how did this get nominated for Best Director and not Best Picture?
Right.
How did Jim Carrey get shut out of the Oscars altogether? They hate comedies. They hate Jim Carrey. They hate life.
Yeah.
You know? And I thought that was the worst thing that the Oscars could ever do.
Yeah.
Then 2016 came along. But yeah, I loved that Jim Carrey got an award from the MTV Movie Awards.
Okay.
That they gave him something. The Golden Globes gave him something that year.
I think he got Best Fart from the MTV Movie Awards the previous year.
Yeah.
For Ace Ventura 2.
Yeah, yeah.
So
he was very talented. He's a talented artist.
He is. He's a painter
now. Fartist. he is a painter now. Oh, my God. Yeah, we can talk about all of that. I have some theories about Jim Carrey late in his life that pertain to this movie.
Okay.
We can talk about that at the end, in the last half of this. But when did you first see this movie? This wonderful cinematic piece, Rob.
Mm-hmm. So I've seen it, but I do this thing. It's kind of shameful, and I hope – I fall asleep a lot, and I
– I think that's because you do this other thing that's legal now, but I think that's because you do that.
This was even before that because it was in university. I rented it. I started watching it, and I fell asleep, and I didn't see the whole thing. And then later, I – saw the end of it. Mm. And I've seen the ending of it like three or four times.
Jesus.
So I think that I assumed that I had seen it like all the way through in a linear way.
Right. Yeah, you like got the Cole's notes and you were like, got it.
But I've experienced it more like the main character of Slaughterhouse-5 experiences reality. You know, I've dropped in for pieces here, then bam, I'm back over there in the future.
With the Trafalgarians?
Something like that.
Yeah, all
right. It's a brilliant book.
It is so good. Well, that's too bad. Have you ever seen it all the way through?
I think this was my first time seeing it all the way through.
Oh, my Lord.
But then I'm not actually sure because...
So you just saw the highlight reels, the best ofs, and you didn't see the movie all the way through.
But I'm not sure because this movie plays in such an unconventional way. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel like I missed anything when I was rewatching it this time. I was like, yes, I remember that. I remember Meryl. I remember Marlon.
Right. Yes, all the, like, starlets from the studio era. Marlon and Meryl and stuff. Anyway.
So, yeah, I was very happy that we would get to revisit it. And, you know, it's also a movie that, like, I've read a lot about. It gets talked about in university courses.
Yeah, it's philosophy like of Truman Show, religion of Truman Show. There's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like I have seen this movie more than I actually have.
You might have studied this movie more than you saw it.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
I feel like there are a lot of people out there in that boat with you.
Right.
Waves crashing down upon it, trying to drown you all. What happens in the movie. We'll get there.
Okay.
We'll get there.
All right.
So do you want to break down the movie for people that maybe have just read an essay on it and have never seen it?
Okay. So The Truman Show is a movie about The Truman Show.
What?
And we get it all right from the beginning because it comes from Ed Harris's giant talking head.
Head Harris.
Yeah. It's very extreme, the first image. Like, it just feels way too close to us. It's not comfortable.
No.
And we see interviews with all of these creatives on this show, The Truman Show, which is a giant reality TV program that everybody tunes into that follows the life of this guy named Truman Burbank.
Because the huge set they've built this like town in is in Burbank.
Yeah, we got that.
It takes up most of Los Angeles, though. I don't think it's just in Burbank. When like we see the bird's eye view of it, it's like that's expensive.
They probably changed a bunch of tax codes.
Yeah,
so that they could. It's all in Burbank. It's one town, you know. It's like a Disney thing.
Yeah, it feels like they just put a dome over most of Los Angeles. Did you know that like that's what Mel Lastman wanted to do with Toronto at one point? Was put a dome over all of fucking Toronto?
Mayor Lastman, now our second craziest mayor.
God. And then The Simpsons took that and ran with it and made the movie from it.
Oh, that really? Was like, is that what it's from?
It was a real thing.
And Stephen King.
Yeah, and Stephen King. Yeah. Fucking Under the Dome.
Originally, it was just about the Blue Jays. But Truman, his life is pretty normal. It's very average. He's not doing anything spectacular, which would entertain the masses.
No, he's like an insurance salesman. He has like a kind of normal 1950s-esque home life.
Mm-hmm. And like his day seems to follow the same beats. Like he gets up, he goes to work, he says hi to these people. There's like the two creepy twins. He says his catchphrase, which is,
good morning, in case I don't see you. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or or smoking. I think that was the other one that he used in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give me a paper there, will you, Errol?
Oh, and one of these.
My wife
loves her fashion mags.
That'd be all for you, Truman?
That's the whole kit and caboodle.
Catch you later.
Yeah.
Morning.
Hank.
Morning, Truman.
Oh. Morning, Truman.
Good morning, Truman.
Hey, how are you guys?
Beautiful day, isn't it?
Always.
And how's your lovely wife?
Good, good. How about yours?
Oh, couldn't be better.
Good.
But it's a very sort of mundane, everyman sort of existence. You may say that he is the Truman.
Yes.
His middle
the
name is
that are Truman.
He's very Truman.
Well, he's been working out. You know, that's why he's so Truman.
But he starts to notice that things are a bit awry in his world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, a giant fucking light almost falls on him.
Yeah, like a Fresnel, like one of those like stage lights.
I thought it was like a Parcan.
Oh, might have been.
Yeah.
Yeah. It looked like it had a Fresnel lens. Anyway.
I don't know.
Feeder kids.
Yeah. But, I mean, that is concerning, right?
Yeah.
Who's putting on this show? Lights are falling out of the sky.
And like almost murdering the only person you have to take care of.
Right. That's right.
It's like a meter away from him.
Well, presumably, like, other extras have met their death during the production of this show.
Yeah, I mean, luckily it has the same scare tactics that bombs in the Second World War had with, like, those little whistles on them. Like, it felt like it had a slide whistle on the side. All the way down. It's very cartoony.
It's a safety device.
Yeah, exactly. It warns you that's going to happen. But he's kind of freaked out, but then the radio says, oh, no, a plane kind of fell apart, lost a piece of its engine.
Right.
Apparently it lights its own engine or something.
But all's not perfect in his life.
No.
Like, he lives on this island. It's called SeaWorld. Is that what it's called?
He helps an orca escape at one point.
Sea Haven Island.
Yeah.
And at one point he goes and buys a boat ticket.
Right. Yeah.
And it seems like
this show's just fucking with him at this point. Because we already know that he lost his dad when he was younger.
Well, we don't know this at this point.
Oh, okay.
It's just something that he does and, you know, it seems casual. And we wonder, like, oh, how is this going to work? Like, is he just going to get out?
Right. Is he going to escape this crazy
world? But he buys the ticket and then he can't do it.
Right.
He's afraid.
The fear gets to him. It's the mind killer.
Yeah.
So he can't go on the boat. And there's all these like little tests that this show throws him. Like, it's almost like it's designed to catch the viewer up to what Truman's been living in. Most of the people watching this show have been watching for their whole lives.
Right.
And for his whole life, right? So it feels, when I was watching this time, I felt a little like, oh, there's a lot of exposition in here that we don't, it feels a little jarring at times.
Yeah.
Like we can get that he's afraid of the ocean. He says he doesn't want to fly. He's very cloistered in this small town. We get that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can see the flashback later. I don't know. It just feels like, why is this show testing him all the time? When, like, that testing might spur him to overcome his fear at the same time. You know?
That's just the format of the show. It's like Survivor.
Okay.
You know? There's challenges, different things. But everybody, I mean, it is watched by millions, and there's even like a Truman cafe that people are watching from.
Yeah.
And there's that Olan Jones woman from Edward Scissorhands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
who
she's great.
Seems to be a big fan. And she's the one who shows us the flashback. There was at one point another woman that Truman was interested in.
Yeah.
But she wasn't part of the plot. She was just an extra.
Yeah. And Truman's been like going through magazines and like making a weird.
Right.
Like horrifying.
Collage?
Collage of this woman.
Yeah. It's definitely a serial killer collage.
Definitely.
It's pretty Buffalo Bill.
But she's kind of a serial killer too. When we do flash back to her, she has like her whole board full of yarn and like pegs of different actors in the show that she's trying to get to.
Right.
To get to Truman.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's this kind of flashback where we meet this other woman that Truman falls in love with that wasn't part of the plot. Mm-hmm. And she tries to tell him that he's on a show, but he doesn't quite understand. And then she's whisked away.
Yeah. Yeah. He's even, like, staring at her when he has his very orchestrated meet cute with his wife.
Yeah. Laura Linney.
Yeah.
Who's great.
I mean, yeah, she's great in this movie.
Yeah.
Did her and Jim Carrey have a relationship?
No.
Okay, great.
I don't think so. I think it was Mary, like the woman who played Merry Christmas from Dumb and
right,
Dumber was
that's
like
what
his
I'm
co-star
thinking.
Of.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I don't think he dated a co-star again.
Okay.
Yeah, until he wanted
he
to be
he wasn't in a movie with Jenny McCarthy?
I think they might have some movies of their own. But
whoa.
No, they're all about inoculations. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, yeah, he's broken up. You know, even though he's married, he still pines for this woman.
Yeah. And he kind of starts realizing that things are awry and amiss when his wife has her fingers crossed in one of their wedding photos.
Right. That always hurts.
Yeah.
Did you look at your wedding photos after this plane?
I combed the fuck through them. And I didn't see any. But I'm going to go back to that photographer for sure.
No. Anybody from the back angle? Yeah.
Yeah. And he starts to suspect things when, like, the radio messes up and he starts hearing his own life being orchestrated.
Right. That's just that's just shoddy, like, crewmanship, right?
Yeah. It's Trumanship. Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty bad. He also, like, goes into a building and the elevator isn't built yet.
Yeah.
So he sees, like, the actors behind the – sitting in their folding chairs and stuff.
That's right. And they all have to, like, scramble and, you know, make it not an elevator.
I know. And all these, like, retconning things they do to make it seem like he's going crazy, like gaslighting him.
Yeah. And there's always people who, after the fact, tell him, like, oh, yes, that building was under construction for that reason.
Exactly. Yeah. My favorite bit of this is when he really, really starts suspecting and he follows his wife to the hospital.
Right.
And she's a nurse, surgeon's assistant. And so Truman's watching the the surgery and the actor has to actually cut into a woman, which I can only imagine the lawyer is watching this at home being like, oh, my God, no.
Well, even I was kind of like, you know, you feel the kind of tension.
Yeah.
I felt bad for that poor guy. Like, I hope that first of all, I hope that he's not just some extra being paid like $100 and a lunch.
You mean the person getting cut into?
Yeah, in the reality of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
exactly.
I hope that he's got like some sort of like special. I don't know how equity pay works, but
no, that's a stunt. I think that would be a stunt.
Yeah.
So you get, you know, an extra $100 that day.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. But that's kind of fun. And they have, like, a lot of fun in-world with that stuff, with, like, Truman suspecting and going a little crazy. But his best friend kind of comes to the rescue when he does really snap and take Meryl hostage.
Yeah. I mean, that moment's, like,
it's insane.
Crazy. Like, he takes her hostage with a knife.
Yeah, with, like, this thing that she is – which is great because it's a thing that she's trying to sell on air.
Right.
Because they have all this product placement all the way through, which I thought was another little stroke of genius I loved. And so the advertisers for that are probably like, what did you – we're suing you. Like, he used it as a weapon?
There's no bad publicity.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Marlon has to, like, essentially, like, step in. And that's the point where Laura Linney breaks character. She's like really? Are you going to let this happen?
Yeah, exactly. No one's stopping it. The director isn't calling cut. Nothing's happening. No one's coming in to save her except Marlon, his friend, finally comes in and kind of talks him down from the ledge. This whole thing, we should back up a little bit and say it was started when he saw his dad, who was supposed to be dead on the boat, in the street.
Right.
And so he goes kind of insane, being like, he's not dead. He's out there. Maybe he had a twin. I don't know how to explain this.
Yeah.
And that would have been a great way to explain it, but they don't. The director actually brings the dad back when Marlon's talking him off that ledge.
Yeah. Well, at first they kidnap him.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Off the set.
Onto the bus, yeah.
Yeah.
Dad? Hey, what are you doing? Hey!
It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I love the world that he lives in, and like the structure, it very much feels like a Kafka story.
Yeah.
You know, like he's unaware, we're kind of aware, mm-hmm. he's just going through like these processes without knowing what's happening.
Yeah, and you feel for him, like the I don't know if like anyone in your life has ever kind of like tried to gaslight you, but it's a crazy making experience where you're like, sorry, no, they have. I'll tell you right now, they just start gaslighting you on that. But yeah, it's like this crazy making thing where you're like, no, I watched that happen. They're like, no, it never happened. You're like, I put, you
know. Has that happened to you?
Yeah, a little bit.
Was it me?
No, you've tried. Tried. No, I know you haven't. No, someone did that to me at one point, and it was just a crazy making experience where I was like,
damn.
we could deal with this stuff if we could talk about it, but
damn.
We could never talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like watching it, I hadn't had that experience before watching Truman Show again, and then having that experience and watching Truman Show again, I was like, this is horrifying. Just this poor guy. Everyone is making him insane. Like, he is experiencing reality on very many different wavelengths, and everyone's lying to him on every one of them. And
yeah.
It was kind of hard to watch at some points.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because I felt for him so much.
For sure.
Yeah.
As he suspects more and more, yeah. We also see more and more of Ed Harris's character, Kristoff,
yeah.
Sort of freaking out. Not so much freaking out, but, like, trying to damage control the situation.
Because he has, like, network execs. He's just the director of the show. So mm-hmm. there's a whole machine behind him that he needs to answer to.
Yeah, that's right. Philip Baker Hall gets in there.
Yeah, yeah, that's
adds,
great.
Like, a second of gravitas to the program.
And then he's out.
Yeah.
And then he's never seen from again.
And we also have Paul Giamatti as I don't know, something. He's there.
He was a great side character for a little while. He was, like, in My Best Friend's Wedding. It was perfect performance. And in this, that like last scene with him, we'll get there, him hitting Truman in the boat with the weather, he makes that scene work for me.
Yeah. This was peak Paul Giamatti.
Peak Paul.
You know?
Yeah.
I think before Sideways, because then, you know, he just went all.
Yeah, kind of went sideways.
That's right.
All right. So he does kind of go insane. He does pull back a little bit, though, when his father is reintroduced.
Right. And they say he had amnesia or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, and, like, that old trope. Come on.
Yeah. Well, it works on TV.
Yeah.
So there is that point where Truman does seem to go back completely to normal. He's saying the same things to everyone. He's going back to work. He's doing the game, and all seems to be right with the world.
Right. But we find out that he's acting.
Right.
And he quickly finds a way to disappear by pretending to make like a big pile of junk, and then
he basically Ferris Bueller's his way out of the situation. He puts like a snoring tape machine on, and there's a snowman in his sleeping bag. It's very weird.
Does he have Ferris Bueller in his world?
I don't know. I feel like no, because he only has 50s-esque like TV shows that he watches. He watches this one about like this boy and his dad. Like that's the one that he loves the most. So anyway.
In the world of the movie Ferris Bueller references The Truman Show.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he goes missing. And so they do something that they've never done in all the 30-something years of the program. They stop the transmission and they search for him.
Yeah, and I love that he, like, turns the sun on at one point.
Yeah.
Like, we can't find him in the dark. Turn it on. Turn the sun on. They're like, no. And he's like, yes, hit him. So then he kind of realizes that the only place they're not watching is the kind of simulated ocean they have.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Truman wouldn't go there. But when they look, he's in the goddamn boat.
Mm-hmm.
Truman has overcome his fear because they've tested him too much, Rob. I'm telling you, he was tested too much. And he overcame his fear.
And learned to sail.
Well, I feel like he knew how to sail a little bit from being a kid with his dad.
Oh.
Sailing that boat. Because he
was it a sailboat?
Yeah, it was a sailboat,
okay.
I think.
All right.
Yeah, and he did get back to land, presumably after his dad drowned.
Okay.
He should have taken some CPR lessons instead of sailing lessons.
They're both handy.
Yeah. But when Truman's found, Christoph, the mad director, is like, hit him with, like, make him go back.
Oh, yeah.
Hit him with some waves, hit him with some weather.
Yeah, this part's crazy when the storm happens.
I know.
And they almost drown him. I mean, it seems like he might actually be drowned.
They capsize him and he's tied to the boat.
And then they turn off the storm and the boat sort of rights itself and undrowns him.
With the very flexible Jim Carrey, like, half off the boat.
Yeah.
So, but he's alive and he sails on. And this is my favorite moment of the whole movie is when it, like, goes silent and the mast hits the wall.
Oh, that's just a beautiful moment.
It's a beautiful, like, Peter Weir just knocks it out of the park. It's so good.
Yeah. It's iconic.
Yeah. And then the music swells up and he's trying to get out. And then he walks along to that door.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that big kind of final confrontation with Christoph being like, you should stay.
You can't leave, Truman.
Please, God.
You belong here.
You can do it.
With me. Talk to me. Say something. Say something, goddammit. You're on television. You're live to the whole world.
He tells him that he can exist here in a world without fear, which is the thing that he is the most afraid of.
And then he gives his patented one-liner.
Yeah.
And leaves into the dark.
Yeah. And it's such like a weird self-contained movie because it just ends there.
Yeah, well, we go to the audience for one last visit.
Right, and they're all, you know, finding something else to watch.
Yeah.
There's probably like a million imitation shows. There's like the Blaine show where, you know,
Blaine it's Ed is TV just, right there.
You know, doing this podcast and...
Yeah, exactly. Get it early if you watch the Blaine show.
I blabbed. Abort.
Oh, no, I'm crazy. Well, I mean, this is a real thing, and we'll talk about that too.
Oh, my God.
But when we come back from this message, that might just be us talking to you again.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Rewatchability. And Merry Christmas. If you just tune into the middle of this, which you can't as a podcast, not like we're on the radio.
I mean, you could butt fast forward. That's what's happened to me.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's good. Well, to catch you up, Rewatchability is a podcast about... I have some trivia for you, Rob.
Okay.
And then we have some behind the scenes. We're going to go into religion here. This is going to be a massive...
I'm going to abstain. I'm an atheist.
Okay. Yeah, me too. It's going to be awkward. Okay, so the trivia for you. Three questions.
Well, okay.
Paul Giamatti.
Yes.
Was in this movie.
Yes.
He was also in another Jim Carrey film. Which one was it?
Oh. Whew.
Act harder. You know this.
Is he in The Grinch?
No. No, he's not in The Grinch.
Oh.
Just drinking some wine.
Oh, Eternal Sunshine?
No, Eternal Sunshine. Man in the Moon.
I didn't know that.
Oh, well, I thought you would. It was actually Jim Carrey's next film.
Really?
Yeah. And Paul Giamatti's next film. So they were bosom buddies for a little while.
Well, they could both commiserate with each other for not winning Oscars, I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, and Paul Giamatti, like, saw Jim. Did you ever see that Man in the Moon documentary about Jim Carrey?
No.
Jim and Andy, I think
it
was
called. Oh, yeah, I've seen bits of it.
Whew.
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, Paul Giamatti probably did not like Jim Carrey after both these movies.
I don't know. He wasn't so insufferable in the last one.
Because there was also stuff on this movie, like, no one could mention any other film to Jim Carrey. Jim Carrey was, like, trying to live as Truman in this world.
Right.
So he was like, you can look at me like I'm an actor because I am, and I need to be weirded out by that, but you can't mention Jim Carrey, which is part of my whole thing. I think it started his, like, depersonalization thing, right, that he's going through right now. It was like, Jim Carrey is the actor. I am something different. Start with The Truman Show. I think acting this movie was a little fine crack in the china of his psyche.
Right.
And it has opened up
and
wide.
Man in the Moon was the
the
dam bursting.
Yeah, exactly. So instead of getting paid his usual $20 million at the time.
Wow.
Jim Carrey, man of the people, took a pay cut so that he could perform the role of Truman and the show could get made. It was only a $60 million budget. Can't have a third of the budget go to him.
No.
So what was he paid for this film, Rob?
$19 million.
I mean, that's in the spirit. $12 million still.
Okay.
Like, Jesus. A man got to eat.
And pay Laura Linney $5. Equality.
And she had to use that slice and dice chef tool.
I know. She was pitching those products, too. It's like, can I take these home? Jim wants those.
Yeah. They were gifted to her on set. She's like, oh, the only woman gets the chef tools, huh? Okay. Yeah. Cool. Thanks.
Typical.
All right. So Truman, at one point, says that he wants to go to Fiji.
Right.
Because the woman that he loves, her dad, says, we're going to Fiji.
Right.
And he says it's the furthest you can get from Florida without coming back, which would make it Florida's antipode.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh.
So that's incorrect.
Oh.
What is actually Fiji's antipode?
I feel like I saw this.
Did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
Isn't it like somewhere in Vietnam?
It is. That is entirely incorrect.
Oh.
It is in Mali. Near the mountain of Timbuktu.
Right, yeah, that's what I saw.
There you go. Vietnam.
I knew it wasn't like Wyoming.
Yeah, I know, it's not Wyoming. Great. Well, you did right. You did good.
Those
you
are all the questions? Coal.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Those are the questions.
I don't know. I feel like I didn't. I don't know.
No,
I feel like you could have given me one of those.
You did fine. Well, I can give you one of these.
Listen to those records.
I'm sure.
I don't want to take the erotic one back home.
You think I want to take that home to my wife? What is this, Blaine? Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ. It's from a movie. No. All right. So JM couldn't be here today.
No.
Because he wanted to spend Christmas with his family.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is bullshit.
Fuck family.
We're here.
On Christmas Day.
On Christmas Day. Okay. But he wanted us to mention something,
okay,
which was the crazy first draft of this script.
Oh.
And there wasn't just one first draft. There were 16 first drafts of this script.
That's not how first drafts work.
Before Peter Weir came on board. And so I'm going to tell you a little bit about Truman Show V.1.
Okay.
Okay. So it was called The Malcolm Show.
That's ridiculous.
And there was quotes on the script, one from Lily Tomlin. She said, "We're all in this alone," which I thought was a great quote.
Nice.
I fucking love Lily Tomlin.
Yeah, she's great.
She's so good.
Do you watch Grace and Frankie?
No, I don't.
Oh, you suck, dude.
I like
I don't watch it either.
No, the fuck you do? But I suck.
My girlfriend does, though, and it's
that's great.
Yeah.
Well,
but
Frankie,
I watch it with her sometimes. And I'm like, you know,
Those guys are great.
That's awesome. I did watch the first two episodes and then told Netflix to never show me that again.
You can do that?
No, I just screamed at the screen. Okay. Yeah. There was also an Edward Hopper painting of A Room by the Sea on the front of it, which is just like it's like a normal vestibule. The door opens out onto the ocean, though. So that kind of like makes you feel maybe a little Truman Show-esque, like with the ocean there and the fakeness of it all.
Wait, what are we talking about?
This is the script, the beginning of the script.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, in this version, everything's the same.
Okay.
Except that it's not a sunny seaside Florida town. It is downtown New York.
Ooh.
Built inside the studio.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a grisly taxi driver.
Wait, do they use Toronto?
As New York, that would have been great. Just putting a box of the Empire State Building over the CN Tower.
Yep. And oh, don't come up here.
Why are you revolving?
Elevator's broken. Use the stairs. Oh, don't use the stairs.
It was like a rain-drenched kind of taxi driver-esque New York on the Hollywood soundstage. Truman himself was addicted to alcohol and drugs.
Oh, man.
And his marriage to Meryl was going downhill fast. He was seeing a prostitute. And
so this is like one of those first drafts that's like very close to the writer's life.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking at you, Andrew Niccol.
No. He gave us Gattaca.
He did give us – and then he gave us In Time.
Yeah, other things which are not so great.
Yeah.
He's fallen on rough times again.
So the prostitute at one point, he like dresses her up as the girl that went to Fiji.
Oh, yes.
And so he's pretending that she's her and sleeping with her.
Well, that's slightly less creepy than the Buffalo Bill, you know, collage.
Yeah, maybe. And then at one point she says, hey, Truman, where you been? You've been cheating on me? She's like, it's like down and out, scuttled prostitute.
Scuttled.
This is horrible.
Do you scuttle a prostitute?
Just like an old boat.
That's terrible.
And then there is no TV show. We don't see the TV show aspect of this until the third act. It's a reveal.
Oh.
But there's been someone following him around all movie. And that's Christoph with like a headset. And he like peeks out from corners and is like, oh, there he is. And I don't know why he doesn't have like a central place to look down on him. The moon was a good call. And then at one point when Truman's going through his psychotic break, he grabs a random newborn baby by a random mother passerby. And he says, say my name or I'll smash its head open. So he threatens to kill this baby unless she, like, confesses that this world isn't real. which is insane. And,
I mean, the ratings would be great.
They'd be through the roof. And then the final thing, instead of cutting in black, as Truman finally steps outside in the real world, Niccol's script ended with seeing him flee through the Hollywood backlot, take a tour guide hostage, and then have like this gun standoff with Christoph on the roof.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm so glad none of that is in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, that sounds like very Running Man-ish.
Yeah.
Like very dystopia, very crass.
You know 80s. What it also sounds like?
What?
Schenectady, New York.
Oh, well, except for Schenectady, New York's great or depressing. I can't decide which right now.
I was depressed for 2 weeks after. I like needed to go back to therapy after I watched that movie. It was horrifying.
Yeah.
But the man following him around, him being in his own world of his own kind of creation, being addicted to drugs and alcohol. Also, he sees his daughter as a prostitute at one point. Like, feels like very, like, the down and out world, very the same.
Right.
Like, a lot of those things are in the original Truman Show, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he stole it. I'm just saying that, like,
you're going to send Charlie Kaufman on a crisis of confidence that we're never going to recover from when we see the movie of it. Did I make this movie? Did I steal from this?
Yeah, exactly.
Who will play him?
I don't know. Probably someone on fire covered by pigeons or something. I don't know. But it does – I just feel like maybe it's not stolen. I don't think it's stolen. But like you said, when a writer is writing their own life a little bit, these things happen.
Yeah.
It's this very like male like machismo thing that comes through, and even Charlie Kaufman is not immune to it. So anyway, now to the behind the scenes, Rob.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you a bit about how this movie came to be.
Behind the scenes of behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Okay.
So
I forgot to talk about my favorite part of this movie.
Please.
Which is where Philip Glass is just randomly live scoring the scene.
I like saw him and I was like, is that Philip Glass? And then I had to go and see his – like it was actually a cameo by him.
But he's like not even the composer of this movie. It uses like all of his music. There's like that really great bit from Mishima at the end.
Oh, so yeah. Good. His music is so fucking good.
Oh, I should have gotten you the soundtrack to Mishima.
Well, I would really appreciate that.
Sorry, dude.
Thanks for the Blue Lagoon though. Thanks for that.
But that was funny. But he's not even the composer of the movie. I was
no.
like –
I know. It's weird.
Throw him a gig.
But it's kind of nice to see him there.
He has to keep his taxi driver's license because he's so afraid that he'll run out of money.
Really?
Yeah. That's like a story about Philip Glass. I love Philip Glass. He's a character.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So in an interview, Peter Weir stated that he wanted to have cameras installed mm-hmm. in all the theaters that were showing this movie. And instead of cutting...
Is this going a pervy direction?
Yeah. Instead of cutting to
First he wanted them installed in the bathrooms. when they told him no, he was like, okay, fine, just the theaters.
just twirling his mustache. But I'm Peter Weir. Put it in the
It's
the
actually
bathroom.
Peter Weird.
No, he wanted for when it cut to the audience for it to show us... The audience watching The Truman Show.
Oh.
For us to feel that like, voyeurism. I don't know.
So he's saying every theater should install, like, this specialized closed-circuit camera that the projector will turn off or, like, be moved out of the way, and then, like, a different thing would come
right.
on.
Yeah.
And the projectionist, which is a thing that doesn't exist anymore, would have to do this.
Listen, is it so much crazier than saying, I have a new format for film in general that every theater showing this fucking Blue Smurf movie has to use because it's going to be in 3D, that thing that no one wants? Is that any crazier, Rob?
No.
I'm just saying Peter Weir didn't have the level of clout that Cameron did.
Well, this didn't make bazillion dollars.
No, but it was successful.
It was successful.
It was all right. It didn't make the gigawatts of
but
dollars.
But it's like an exponential success because it like was a smaller movie that looked big and got like a big return, right?
Yeah, it was only $60 million, which actually was kind of big at the time. Yeah. They wouldn't let Andrew Niccol was going to direct it. And they wouldn't let Andrew Niccol direct it because he wanted $80 million for it. And they were like, this is the most expensive film school we'll ever have. Mm-hmm. We don't want a first-time director to do that. So back then, Gary Oldman was going to star in the tiny kind of Taxi Driver-esque version of it.
Ooh.
Yeah, very different movie.
Okay.
And then Sam Raimi came in. He was going to direct. And that didn't happen. But that would have been kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
But the most interesting director attached to it that read the script and then quit was Canada's own, David Cronenberg.
Oh, okay. I could see that.
Yeah.
I mean, Truman gets like a flesh centipede out of his torso. And
oh,
it's
man,
like,
yeah.
Turn on the TV.
He gets All sucked into a TV. His like fingers just turn into like buttons on a... Clicker, like remote control. Yeah, man.
But
it would've been great.
I do love the fuck out of Videodrome.
Yeah.
the gun vagina. The guy
oh,
opens
right.
the vagina is
yeah, yeah.
the gun.
Yeah, even Naked Lunch. Like that.
I love Naked Lunch.
Yeah, like that sort of thing I could see. Anyway,
yeah.
Didn't happen.
Yeah.
Cronenberg turned it down. And then Weir came in because he said, I don't know to whom, but he said, find me a broken script, one that I can fix, apparently in that voice.
Wow.
With a cigar in his mouth. He's English. I don't know why he was putting on an American accent. But he did that, and they handed him Truman's Show, that first draft of it, and he was like, we need to make it funny. Got to make this funny, and we got to put Jim Carrey in it, and that's when it kind of turned into the Truman Show that we see today.
Right. And it's like a very different movie.
Well, all the plot points are the same, and like Truman discovering it is the same. It's just that we know it's a TV show at the beginning, and it's Florida, this sunny seaside right. town. The other thing that's kind of interesting is that this town is real. It's a real town.
What?
And it's run by the Seaside Institute.
What? That sounds evil.
Yeah, because Florida, apparently you go to Florida to like make your own country or city like Walt Disney did.
Right.
And this guy did too. I didn't write his name down, unfortunately. He's in the movie at one point on a bench, he and his wife, and they inherited 80 acres of Seaside, Florida, and they started building and designing a city built on certain principles.
They weren't like racist principles, were they?
One that a camera had to be included in every washroom. No, the one that they weren't racist principles, although I'm sure it's pretty white. From the looks of all the extras that they actually did get from that town to right. be in this movie, it's pretty white. It's called the New Urbanism Movement. They created it while they created this town, and it right. got adopted into a bunch of other like Connecticut towns and other towns okay. around the U.S. And so it's like big, wide boulevards, lots of like walking-only spaces.
Yeah.
Especially in commercial centers. And then I don't know why this is part of it, but every house had to have a front porch.
Yeah, so you could yell at kids from it, shake exactly. your fist. Get off yeah. my lawn!
Yeah, you didn't have to have a lawn, though, so I don't know. Get off the shared walkways!
Get off my pebbles!
But I thought that was kind of interesting that, like, this whole town started a new
yeah.
movement in architecture.
Yeah, I find that interesting as
city
well.
City planning.
Until it all went wrong!
The other thing that's kind of interesting is that Peter Weir filmed this in a TV aspect ratio.
Oh.
Closer to the 4:3 that kind of we knew as TV in the 90s.
Right.
And everything, if you see this in widescreen, it's just cropped on the top.
Okay.
So you're missing so much of the image if that happens.
Oh, no.
I know.
This is just like watching The Simpsons on Disney Plus.
I didn't hear that they did that.
Damn
The Simpsons.
You, Weir.
No.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Damn you, Disney!
Yeah, the original DVD is the only one that has the kind of director's version of this movie on it.
Right.
And it's DVD quality. So
excellent.
That's great. Also, the last thing I kind of say about the behind the scenes is that the start of production was delayed for a year because Jim Carrey had to film two movies, Cable Guy and Liar Liar, while preparing for this role.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
This is like right at the end of good Jim Carrey.
Yeah, I know. Before he becomes like crazy method Jim Carrey.
Yeah, and then like we get like one blip of broken Jim Carrey does really well in Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah.
And then back to crazy Jim Carrey.
There are some deleted scenes too that kind of give more context to this world. There are some that several that were cut that has like Marlon
mm-hmm.
feeling really bad about lying to Jim.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And at one point, he finds Truman in the search, and then he lets him go. He's like, go. Run for it. Flee.
Nice. I like that guy. That's Noah Emmerich, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He does a good job.
Yeah.
I also like the scene where Jim Carrey comes to talk to him, and he's like restocking the candy bars, and we see it from the thing.
Yeah, from the camera inside.
Yeah. He, like, restocks the candy bars, and then when Jim Carrey isn't looking, he takes back out the candy bars so that he doesn't have to finish his task. It's like actor business.
Oh, that's fun. I didn't notice that.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's neat.
I like that. I like some of the, like, improv-y things that they allowed Jim to do on this as well, because it wasn't ever over the top, I didn't think.
Uh-huh.
Although, I mean, some of his things when he was going crazy, I could see some Cable Guy in it. But for the most part, it felt really true to this kind of very congenial, sheltered guy losing his mind.
Yeah.
And there's that one moment when he's at the vending machine and he really wants his friend to come with him, and his friend is kind of giving all these excuses. He just kind of barks at him in this weird, like, impulsive way, and I really liked it.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good moment.
I have to say, though, I don't know if I love Jim Carrey in this movie. I think he does a really good job, but I don't know if he's the right person. Like, he just doesn't have a natural resting face. He doesn't seem like he can, like, process any emotions without doing, like, a parody of that emotion. Like, his face is always – it's always too big. Like,
right.
Even when he is, like, discovering that he's been living in the simulation and, you know, the thing has crashed through the thing and he's getting out, he looks like he's in, like, a parody of like, wonder and fear.
Yeah.
You know, or astonishment or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's big reactions.
And it's hard to, I don't know, identify with Jim Carrey because he seems larger than life.
Right.
I don't know if that's a problem for the movie, but I also sort of wonder, like, if it had somebody who you sort of, like, who is more of an everyman sort of actor, like, whether it would be a movie that you can sink into deeper.
Yeah. I mean, I really want to watch Eternal Sunshine after watching this because I feel that I loved Jim Carrey's serious turns until the number 27 or whatever it was. Oh, God.
Yeah.
But I mean, I loved Eternal Sunshine. It's one of my favorite movies, and this was too. But I do see, after all my griping when I was a teenager, like, why wouldn't you give the, like, comedian best actor? Like, he deserves it. I don't know if he deserves it.
Yeah.
I don't know if he deserves it. He does such a great job, but I don't think he does a stellar job. I don't think he does the best job of the year.
Yeah.
In that year. So I think I have to agree.
Do you know what else was nominated that year?
No. We can look it up.
No, we don't have to.
But I think that you're a little right. I side with you a little bit just because I think he does a great job for Jim Carrey. I think he breaks through a lot of his own boundaries when
for
doing
sure.
this movie.
Personal best.
Yeah. But would another actor have delivered? Maybe. And probably. And I think Peter Weir was a little myopic when it came to casting Jim Carrey, that he'd, like, postpone this movie and only do this movie if Jim Carrey did it.
Right.
So there are other actors out there. Probably not Gary Oldman. Probably not Gary Oldman at all. The last thing I'll say about this movie is that, did you notice the recurring kind of 139 that happened in this movie? It is his own number 27.
Oh, no.
And it refers to there's a part on the boat. The boat is docked number 139 or something. And,
okay.
And then Christoph references it as well. This is Psalm 139 out of the Bible. And it's pretty – it ties in. It ties in a lot.
Fucking Bible.
It's – I know. It's long. I'm not going to read it all because I don't know. Would God smite – I don't know. I'm an atheist. Would that –
He might.
Yeah, he might. She might. You know, yeah. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Alanis Morissette and Dogma.
Exactly. So there's a lot of things in here. There's like 24 little sentences, but some of them are, you know when I sit and when I rise, you perceive my thoughts from afar. This person's talking about God. Maybe about you discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. This is kind of like Christoph is the God for this. Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? I feel like Jim feels that in this movie.
Mm.
And then another one I thought was kind of cool is pertaining to the end. This is kind of God saying it. If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, the light, and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you, and night will shine like day, for darkness is as light to you.
That's when Christo turns on the lights.
Exactly. I don't know. Thought it was kind of cool.
Wow.
Tied into all that.
Damn, they should give God a writing credit.
Why, thank you.
So what's, like, the religiosity of this movie? Because, yeah, like, I guess, what, it drove a bunch of people crazy or what happened?
No, it wasn't that it drove a bunch of people crazy. It's that a bunch of people have this as their coined in, like, the DSM thing that they struggle with. A lot of people believe that, not a lot, some people believe they are in a TV show designed around them.
Right.
The one experience that I heard on the radio, and I don't know who this guy is, and maybe someone can help me out because I just heard on CBC while I was driving, but he was making a TV show about the fact that he has the Truman Show syndrome. And while doing that...
Whoa.
Yeah, like it just goes into so many levels. He was making it for HBO. He had a psychotic break. And they were like, let's make a TV show about you thinking you're in a TV show like the Truman Show. And he was like, great, but I've already thought that you've come and told me about this. Like, I've been living in this for a while. Like, I've thought you were filming me on several occasions already, and you're not. And so now, like, the director has to tell him when they're filming all the time.
Wow.
And when they've stopped filming.
That seems like an ethical conundrum.
Right? Like, this guy is just really trying to make it. He's a comedian. He's really trying to make it. And this, I don't know. Yeah, it feels like maybe someone's taking advantage of him a little bit.
Yeah.
Or maybe... it's like David Duchovny in Californication. Like,
oh,
maybe not give a guy with a sexual addiction a show where he has sexual addictions.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Did you bring up Californication because Natasha McElhaney's in this movie?
Yeah. Well, she's I love her in that
Yeah,
show.
The person who gets like the most shit in Californication.
I know.
That's the only thing I know her from, I think.
Yeah.
But she's good in this.
She's good. Yeah. Saw her eating ice cream one time.
You saw?
I know.
Whoa.
I know. Big star moment. Big star moment. I was in line to get ice cream waiting for an hour because it's Toronto.
Did she say, Blaine, they all know about you?
No, she's there with her family and looked like they were having a good time. So I asked
for an autograph.
I just took a lot of pictures and video and started yelling at her so she'd respond to me.
Gave her a screenplay and... said she'd be great for this part. We could rewrite it for her.
Yeah, yeah. Please, please, please. Begging. I'm a writer, goddammit. Yeah, no. So that's kind of the Truman Show.
Wow.
Did you... you didn't ever watch it all the way through, but did you feel like it was rewatchable when you watched it? Were there new moments that you discovered? Were there things that you kind of fell into now? You're like, oh, okay, I understand what they're doing there.
Yeah, I do think it's rewatchable, but I also think that it's like one of those things that's like, it's kind of like an existentialist play or like, you know, like a Kafka short story where you're like, man, this is cool when you're like, you know, 16. And then you're like, well, it's still pretty cool, but it's also kind of simple in ways.
Yeah. I think that it hasn't aged well just because so many other people have talked about it,
mm-hmm.
have dissected it,
mm-hmm.
have made movies around it, and mm-hmm. kind of predicated a whole style of television, because Survivor came out the next year, you know?
Exactly. Like, it's not a super big stretch from, like, the sort of entertainment that people watch now. I mean, everybody watches reality TV. You might even say that reality TV has blah, 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 White House, Trump, kill us all, please. But
just the Wilhelm scream as you fall into the pit.
Oh, God, what's going to happen? But in this reality show that is our life, you know, more and more people are expected to sort of share aspects of their lives for the entertainment of others. We do it ourselves on this very podcast.
Right.
You know, we're all performing all the time on social media. Everything is a mirror at this point. So it's a movie that is both like more relevant than ever, but also like less shocking than ever. You're like, I would have some ethical concerns if they like raised a baby from birth and, you know, didn't tell him that he was living in a show. Like, is he ACTRA or, you know, because there's got to be some
compensation issues. Does he get his wages through the insurance
issues.
Job? Yeah.
Yeah, like, just want to make sure everything's above the board union-wise, mostly.
And the other thing that was going to happen, there's a deleted scene where Christoph explains that when Truman conceives another child with a woman, that child will be the spinoff show.
Oh, that's so fucked.
Yeah, I know.
But also, like, there's lots of really fucked stuff on television now, which you can just watch. You can just watch it, and people don't seem to have any ethical qualms about it. Like, you know, like, things about plastic surgery and, like...
The Swan? That was, like, maybe the worst, the lowest moment in American TV
or, but even, like, things where they sort of show it as, like, shocking. I mean, it, yeah, in itself perpetuates the whole industry and,
yeah,
you know, normalizes things.
I once worked with a guy that worked on a reality TV show about a famous rapper later in their years, and the...
Please tell me it's Flava Flav.
I'm not going to say who.
Flav!
I'm not going to say who, but apparently the director of the episode literally gave the guy this instruction. He was like, can you make that person hit the crystal meth again because we didn't get it from the right angle.
Wow.
And it was just like, how is that, like, allowed? How is that? I think, if anything, Truman Show is definitely not shocking, but it's kind of the – it should have been the tombstone on it. Like, it should have been the stanchion that we don't pass.
It just opened Pandora's box.
Yeah. And that makes me feel kind of bad that I'm sure Peter Weir and Andrew Niccol were like, yeah, this will stop what's starting to happen with Big Brother – because I think they had Real World or something before this.
Right.
Well, that's starting to happen. Let's shock this into like a Black Mirror-esque way and won't happen. And it just went into overdrive. And now we are all performing all the time, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I thought it was rewatchable. I thought there was like a lot of cool little moments. Jim Carrey is very watchable. Laura Linney is very good. There's so many little things to notice and little advertisements happening in the background.
Right.
Which makes it rife for rewatchability.
I almost wish that there was a little bit more of the movie. Like, it was pretty short. I kind of wanted to see the character break out of the world a bit, or like...
And take Christoph hostage on the top.
That's right.
Okay.
And kill him. Just kill him. Or, you know, like, find that girl or find something, or like, at least get out there. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It does seem to end abruptly. We want a little bit more packaging than that. But he's no longer being filmed, you know?
Mm.
He's no longer being filmed, so we can't follow that end of the story.
But in the world, you're being filmed everywhere.
Well, now. Yeah. Big
They should have just... Okay, here's what they should have done. Here's the dystopian ending. He escapes, and he thinks he's free.
Right.
But, you know, we can get him from basically every angle.
Right, yeah. People with their phones and CCTV cameras and all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's Truman 2.0.
Yeah.
They should do a sequel. Truman has been living in the world. He thinks it's all past, but then Fresnel falls on him again.
So I think we agree. You say it's partially rewatchable. I say it's very rewatchable.
I think it's all the way rewatchable. I just think there are some quibbles.
Yeah, totally.
It's not a perfect movie.
No, it's not a perfect movie.
But it is a movie that's so different and, you know, does a lot of wonderful things. It's a great movie.
And did them for the first time at the time, which I think is a little overlooked.
Well, there was also stuff like EdTV.
EdTV came out 2 years later.
Well, not in my mind.
Well, Dennis Hopper was supposed to play the Ed. Character. And
I kind of want to see that version. Like, Hopper would be amazing.
I know. Pop quiz.
Turn on the storm. I don't care if he drowns.
But Dennis Hopper then went on to be in EdTV.
Oh.
So he got his weird thing that he wanted to be in a movie about a guy on TV.
Oh, I miss that guy.
Yeah, me too. But that's it for rewatchability this week.
Mm-hmm.
And happy holiday. You know, if you're one of those people that do the things.
The Christmas things?
It's the New Year's things where you write them down.
Oh, resolutions.
Resolutions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. But if you do that, then, you know, we wish you luck on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back in the new year to see how you've held up, which is probably not well. I never do well on my resolutions.
Wow.
I never do them.
We're expecting people to, like, fail on the resolutions before, like, January 2nd. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Happy holidays.
And I should say Merry Christmas to all of our E1 friends as well. Happy holidays.
Yeah.
We forget
thanks,
them
guys.
Sometimes.
Well, because they don't want to speak on the podcast and they don't want to be referenced like we're doing right now.
No.
I'm sorry. Just the shrug. Fuck you guys for even bringing me up. Anyway.
Happy holidays.
And happy new year. And we will see you in the next decade.
Yeah.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.